If a designer comes into my booth, my opinion is you're a professional, you got the credentials to get into the show. Okay, so now let's talk about what we can do together to sell some stuff. If a designer comes in and makes a gorgeous sweater pattern, one sweater is $100 worth of my yarn. I can make just as much money from a good relationship with a designer as I can one store who walks in and orders $300 of yarn.
You're listening to episode 59 of Power Pearls podcast. I'm the host, Caragott Warner, and it's my mission to share those stories that celebrate our passion for making and yarn crafting and what keeps us going down that path. Beginning April 10th, I'm kicking off an exciting 5-day challenge called Stitchucation Shawls. This is not your typical shawl making experience, but rather an intuitive, arty, and unconventional approach to shawl making. For 5 days, you'll receive daily emails and live streaming videos with me. You'll also learn from a basic template that I've been using for years as the basis for all of my triangular shawls. And during these 5 days, we'll dip our toes into the customization waters. To learn more, visit powerpearlspodcast.com/shawls. Hey, Power Pearls listeners, welcome to another edition of Power Pearls Podcast. Today I'm chatting with Stacy Trock, entrepreneur, designer, and founder of Fresh Stitches, a successful crochet company and membership club. Stacy also has her hand in a number of pots in the yarn industry. She's the creative and marketing director for Luette North America. I hope I said that right.
Yep.
Luette, good. And she's also a crochet, knitting, and business teacher, both internationally and on Craftsy. And an author of multiple crochet books, as well as she's the co-chair of the Business and Creative Services Leadership Committee with TNNA. And by the way, she has a superpower, which is education and community building. It's teaching someone how to use a crochet hook or instructing local yarn shops how to use social media for their shops. Stacy enthuses the world with her spunky can-do attitude.
That's what they say.
That's what they say. So, Stacy, thanks so much for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
This is great. So, yes, you do have your hands in many, many pots. And, you know, I'd love to dive into as much as we can, if that's cool with you.
Sure.
Yeah. I really admire your entrepreneurial spirit. And, you know, you really come up with some clever ideas, which I'd love for you to share, specifically about your membership club model and how you grew into that. And also your activities with TNNA, which I've helped a little bit with, and I hope to more in the future.
Yeah.
We can chit chat about that. But, just how you're helping creative business owners. And also, by the way, I was just at CraftCon. I think I had mentioned this to you in on Facebook, and learned some great tips about membership clubs from May Pack. Is that how you say May?
Yeah,
right? Of Tiny Hands and Creative Hive. And she had, I don't know if your ears were ringing. I think I said that to in the email this morning to you, but she had some very high regard. She had high regards for you and just spoke. Yes, she spoke very highly of you.
I got her started on the membership.
You did. Oh my gosh. So I feel really lucky, and you listeners should be really excited right now if membership club ideas are swirling around your head. Okay. So cool. Before we dive into that, can you first share your personal journey and how you entered the fiber-filled world?
Yeah. I mean, I feel like everyone wants that to be like an exciting story. I finished school, and I guess the thing I always say is people, when they're older, like, you can ask them, like, you know, what what are your reflections on life? And they always say, oh, I really wish I had, you know, done a work I enjoyed more or spent less time working, or, you know, what they were never like, oh gosh, I really should have gotten, you know, my 27th law degree. And so I like finished school and wasn't really that interested in what I was doing. And I was like, okay, I should just start out doing something I really enjoy. And what would that be? And this was in 2008, kind of. So Ravelry was new, but there, you know, I certainly wasn't like the fifth person on Ravelry. And Etsy was, you know, there, but not like everyone knew about it, kind of, at that point. And so that was really at the early end of self-publishing crochet patterns, or self-publishing fiber arts patterns. And I thought, like, well, some people are doing it. Like, I can write, like, I had some graphic design-ish layout kind of skills. And I was like, ah, I'll just do that. And so I just started doing it. And here I am.
And here you are.
Here I am.
And so, and you had been a crocheter. Like, what was your kind
just
of specialty?
Like
crochet, knitting, like
hobby
kind of
crocheter? No, so I actually hadn't knit. So my mom taught me to crochet, and I had like entered stuff in fairs like as a kid, and taught myself through books to so I could read patterns and things like that. And then during this starting out thing, I started working in a yarn store, you know, to get my solid $10 an hour to get food. And they were like, we can't hire you if you can't knit, because, you know, like 95% of our customers are knitters. And I was like, okay, that's not a problem. And so I came in one day and the owner showed me to knit, like the knit stitch and the purl stitch. I was like, okay, got it. And I went home and I made like a lunch bag or whatever. And I came back the next week and I was like, okay, I did this and like followed a pattern. They're like, okay, that's good enough. There you go. So I've been knitting for, you know, since then. So I guess pushing 10 years now. But I think once you know one, the other falls in more naturally than
exactly.
the first time.
I always love to hear like what the first project was. They're always very odd, funny.
Yeah, it was a felted with Noni bag, lunch
oh,
bag.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm,
that was ambitious, maybe.
Well, you know, but not really because no. it's felted. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So like all of any irregularities in stitch definition just went away. Mm-hmm. In the washing machine. So, yeah, no, it was a good one.
Well, that's good. So, yeah, I mean, you know, I just like to start that way just to kind of add a little groundwork there. But then, so you started designing patterns. You were like, hey, I'll just give it a try. So it wasn't like you had this strategy in mind at first, right? So you were saying,
yeah,
I want to get into it.
I guess the strategy was, so I knew from, well, okay, so I won't make it sound that like, you know, off the cuff, but I knew from my experience, so my mom taught me to crochet, but still can't read a pattern. Like, can't, I mean, like, it's a men, who knows what kind of block it is. She just can't even get near a pattern. And so I knew there was a niche for patterns that were very well explained. And I actually didn't use the standard crochet kind of pattern layout terminology. Like, I use the same abbreviations, but I was very verbose. Like, so a typical crochet pattern will just say SC2. And that means single crochet in the next two stitches. And I actually would write out SC in next two stitches. And I got all kinds of like flack for like not adhering to the standard templates and whatever. And I put in lots of progress photos. And so I had a niche and a strategy in that way, that it was about educating people. And it was kind of before video. So I think if I had started, you know, in this era, I would have had video tutorials at every step or whatnot. So I had a vision that my patterns were of a better quality in this way, you know, and that I was going to be catering to kind of beginner crocheters. So I had a strategy from that perspective. And I also was designing stuffed animals that were sort of plush size, which there really weren't many of them around. There were a lot of like the kawaii Japanese 3-inch tall stuffed animals, but not really like full size toys. So I had some strategies.
Right. And that's your thing, right? It's like the still small little, like that's your thing with the club, and we'll get into that. So when you took this approach to write your language a little bit differently than what was considered the norm. Yeah, you know, aside from the flack that you got, do you feel like that was a success? Did you kind of create a new language with your patterns?
Oh, totally. I mean, because I think, and I feel like it's more true in crochet than knitting. It's very, very common for someone to have learned, and I think it's because the crochet patterns are less obviously connected to the stitches. And I'll say more about that in a minute. But many, many people learn from their mom or grandma or aunt to do the stitches and can actually make a scarf or an afghan completely fine on their own without a pattern. It's not at all unusual for me to have a student who will say, yeah, I've been crocheting for 25 years. I just can't read a pattern. And that almost never happens to me in the knitting world. Mm-hmm. And I think it's just because the knitting... all of the stitches are on your knit piece, right? Knit 25 pretty obviously means knit the next 25 stitches, right? Whereas in crochet, you have these turning chains, and single crochet the next 25 actually means next 25 single crochets and not counting the turning chains and whatever. And so I think there's a huge market, and I think it still continues to be my saving grace that I'm accessing these crocheters who hadn't previously felt comfortable reading patterns, but now can, because you want to make these things other people are making, right? You just don't have access to that language. So I still think that's my like secret to success is this, photos and formula.
You found your niche in the yarn world.
That's what I do. Yep.
Yeah. Well, I can remember when I first learned, I learned how to knit when I was 12, let it go for a little bit, came back way later. That's my obsession. But I also learned how to crochet, and I learned how to crochet from my mother. And then I figured out how to do it in the round, mm-hmm. and I didn't know how to read a pattern. To this day, I still don't really get how to read a pattern. I mean, I can. I know how to read a crochet pattern, but like the charts, whoa. Get out of here. I can't even, but everything was intuitive mm-hmm. for me. And I think that crochet is more intuitive than knitting because I could come up with an idea and just make it in crochet, but in knitting, I couldn't. Now I can, but I couldn't. Yeah. When I first started, it was so, for a beginner, I could see how a beginner could just freeform crochet, but not feel as intuitive with that in knitting.
Yeah, so, it's a completely different craft, and they have completely different demographics, and it's just not, it's almost just like an accident to me that they both use yarn, really. They're very different.
So it is, that hook and, the needles and, the needles throw me off, and you got stitches on two sides. So you had this product, and then you found this niche, obviously. So when did this club concept come into fruition? And you thought, hey, I'm going to start, I'm going to start creating this. Like, kind of walk us through the paces when, with your club, and how you got started with that.
Sure. So the first iteration of the club started in 2012. So, still a while ago. So I started, every other month physical shipping club. So I had the pattern, and then you would get a goodie and you would get the yarn to make the project shipped to you. So it was more modeled after like a yarn club, like an indie dyer would have a yarn club that sends out a skein every month or every other month or whenever. And that lasted 3.5 years. So I won't go through all of the details, but it was really successful, but also incredibly, it got very difficult to manage in certain ways. So I was at the point of ordering the yarn on cones from the mill to get it in the quantities I needed. And there's a lot of, besides having the storage space in your house to do that, there's also a lot of difficulties with managing the lead time, because I kept it so people could sign up for that month, like they wouldn't have to prepay for a year. So you're ordering this amount, 2 months in advance, hoping that many people are still signed up. So it got very, very, very large. And I was at the point of, I either have to hire employees to just do, you know, we're just going to up it to like 2,000 people and just like crank it out. Or something had to change. And also at the same time, shipping rates were going up. So like my customers in Australia were paying more to have the package shipped than they were actually paying for the kit itself. And they were emailing me and they're like, I'm super sorry, but like I have to drop out. And I'm like, don't be sorry. Mm-hmm. Like that's ridiculous. And so I made the ridiculous decision that everyone said was ridiculous to just end the club because I just couldn't see it. Like I hadn't increased the price and the profit margins were going down because of, you know, I had more waste because of the lead time issues. And I just thought like, this isn't what I want to be doing in 5 years is like shipping, you know, stuff with like 10 employees. And so I thought like, what can I do that's better? And I thought, you know, people had been emailing me all along saying, I want the pattern that you're doing. I don't need the yarn. I can get yarn from my local store. I want the pattern. And I also had a problem happening around is like my community was very strong, but it felt broken up. Like I have like a huge following on Facebook, but some people don't like using Facebook. And then I had a really good Ravelry group. But if you go to a new knitter or crocheter and say, oh yeah, you can join us on Ravelry, you sign up and then find me. I'm in groups under Fresh Stitches. Yeah. Like that seems like too much people. And they don't know what it is. And so I thought like, that's it. I'm going to rip it up, start from scratch. And I'm going to have a membership club that's all digital. It helps the international people who don't need shipping. And so that's the current status is, and I host all of the forums on my own site. So that was a huge website, redo sort of thing. You come, you get a monthly pattern, you get exclusive tutorials and videos. There's the chat rooms, you get a discount on the products in my shop. And yeah, that's what we do.
Okay. Yeah. Cause I was going to ask you because you were on Creative Entrepreneur podcast a couple, months ago, I guess. Mm-hmm. And so you had mentioned, and maybe I missed it all, but, you were talking about the issues with, you know, the physical club.
Yep.
And, you know, how to get, you know, the supplies and what if something is out of stock and, you know, it could be a nightmare, which it sounds like it got to that point where it wasn't
sort of
sustainable. And then you said you were turning over, you were going to be talking about your new concept in the digital club, the digital version.
Yeah.
So, and I was like, what does that mean? Well, of course it makes sense that it's the pattern, the videos, you know, those are like the info products that you're offering. So that explains it. But I was really curious because I didn't remember you really diving into that as much.
Well, actually, so when we recorded that, we recorded it, well, the first time, at TNNA in June. So I had just announced the club was ending like 2 weeks before
that. Oh, wow. Because I was going to ask you, so when did the physical club end? But now we know it was like so last
ended,
June.
Okay. I announced it, I think, in May. And then I think the last shipment was July, I think. It could have been the last shipment was May. And then the new site didn't get launched until this November, so just like 3 months ago.
Wow. So did you?
Because it's a lot of website stuff.
Oh yeah. Well, that's just it. The framework for, you know, a membership club and especially that's delivering digital products. It's, I mean, we could get into, oh, are you using Gumroad and all these other things? But I mean, did you convert? Were you able to convert your physical club people?
You know, disappointingly, not as many as I had hoped. So there's a lot that goes into this. So some part of it is, and like I had really hoped that everyone who had signed up for the physical club would just come on over to the digital one. Like, it's cheaper. You still get the pattern. Why not? You know, I think some people really want the items in their mailbox, you know? So I think that's part of it. The other thing that's part of it is there are some people who had been signed up for the whole 3 years. And when you're in a recurring subscription, they signed up 3 years ago and hadn't, you know, maybe they get them, but hadn't really thought about it again. And so I think they weren't, you know, maybe they got sick of it 2 years ago, but just sort of never canceled it. You know what I mean? And so when I ask them, hey, you want to do it again? They're kind of, you know, like over it. So I think about half of the people signed up, and I'm getting a lot more new people, but it didn't convert from the physical to the digital the way I had kind of hoped it would.
Yeah, I could probably see how that would be the case because, you know, there's two camps, you know, it's that the person that wants that tangible physical product and the other person that really embraces the idea of something that's completely digital. And really, when you think about it, the products are different, you know, I mean, they're similar, but they're different end products. But you know what? It sounds like though, and I embrace it, I think digital is the way to go. So it's just going to take time like anything else. But I mean, it sounds like this for you is a very sustainable approach. And, you know, when I was at CraftCon this past weekend, May spoke about both the physical product club, you know, her Tiny Hands Club, and then Creative Hive, which I think is digital based, right? So it was nice to hear both sides. She was mainly talking to the crafters that are wanting to sell boxes or physical products. And so I was able to garner ideas from that because for me, it's like digital all the way. And she did touch on that. So it is a different approach, you know, because of course with the physical product, you have to be thinking about everything. Like what's your box look like? Do you have pretty tissue paper? You know, the presentation, if your presentation bombs, then you could be done. That could be the last time.
Yeah.
You know, but I know that there are commitments and people join, I guess. So let's just talk real quickly though. So with the membership club, do you have, is it month to month or do people have to pay three? Okay. So it's they month can to do month. Month to month. Yeah.
So my customers have always been very, wanting to not pay a lot up front. Like, so I'm like, okay, I hear you. So it's month to month. Mm-hmm. So it's $6 every month.
Okay. All right. So, you know what? I wanted to maybe, I don't know, shift gears a little bit, unless there's anything else we can really dig into with what's going on with your digital club that,
I think for me, the big change has just been getting, and I'm not sure if this is like the trend for the next 10 years, but consolidating your community in one place. And I think this is something May might not have talked a lot about because for her Tiny Hands business, they're scented necklaces, which are really, really cute.
They are.
but they don't have the same community. Like, they're not bonding over a fellow person who also has a scented necklace in the same way that people are chatting about crochet tips. And so for me, half of it was about making my shipping easier and stuff, but half of it really was about having a place where people could come and not worry about, oh, someone said my thing looked weird on Instagram or whatever, you know, like there's a lot about public management and creating a community online in kind of a safe space. So I think that's also been, because there are some crochet forums and they're absolutely huge and really difficult to monitor. And so that's part of what's happening as well.
And I think that's the thing too, where with a forum, if it's active, then it can really shed bad light on your club or whatever you're trying to do, you know, maybe because a lot of people say just stay away from a forum because you don't know. It may be Deadsville or you have to be the one that's up every day driving it.
Right.
So let me ask you this. So do you have a forum? I guess you
do. That's what the forum is half of the site. I mean, that's what I mean by community is it's, I run the forum on my site. So we, and there's actually two forums. One I fantasize about going, but it only has a few people. It's a forum for beginning designers and hobby makers, because I know a lot of people make my things and then sell them at craft fairs. So it's sort of like tips and tutorials for that group. But most of it are forums just for normal people crocheting, want some help, want some tips, crochet alongs, all of those sorts of things. So yeah, that was the huge redevelopment that my website had to go through to support that kind of thing. Like my server bill I think quadrupled.
Oh my gosh.
To run that sort of thing.
And I'm on your site, and it's beautiful, you guys.
Oh,
so I mean, I know we usually introduce at the end, but freshstitches.com, if you guys are on your phone, go on there right now while we're talking. I always feel like that's like exciting when you can be like hearing the person talk and then go to their website. So yes. So yeah, the community, the forums are pretty awesome. And I can't get in there because I can't log in, but I'm imagining they're pretty darn cool. and yeah, I mean, I think that I just wanted to circle back to what you said. Yeah, consolidating your community all in one place, and that's a really good point that you're not able to bond in the same way with your physical people, because they just want to order the product and then that's it. That's what they get. So yeah, you're cultivating those relationships that hopefully can really last. So what do you use WP wish list, or what are the kind of, just for those people listening, because I've got designers and aspiring, you know, fiber people out there that want to kind of maybe start something like this. So
you mean for running the website,
to running, well, for running your membership club.
So most of it is BB Press. So I'm just going in to see what I have installed. So I run a WooCommerce site.
So it's okay, WooCommerce. Mm-hmm.
And BB Press is what does most of the forum work. Okay. The list of plugins I actually have is like 100 long.
Oh my gosh. And so BB Press it's sort of like WP Wishlist. It's that kind of idea.
I don't know.
It plugs.
I don't know what WP Wishlist is.
Well, WP is, I'm trying to think if it's called WP Wish, like, I don't know. I think that's the name of it, but it's a plugin that works on WordPress, and it's an app, a plugin that allows you to have the membership. Framework.
I mean, so there's lots of components. I mean, so the membership, I run BB Press and Buddy Press for the forums. The membership component is actually a separate thing. So WooCommerce memberships and WooCommerce subscriptions are the two things that manage having a membership. So you could have a membership site that doesn't have a forum, and you can have subscriptions that don't have a membership site. So those are different steps. Mm-hmm. So I had WooCommerce subscriptions when I had a physical product. And then to have something on your site that gateways what you can't, like, so I do certain blog posts only members can see. That kind of thing is WooCommerce memberships. And then if you want forums, BB Press or Buddy Press brings in the forums. So there's different levels of running subscriptionness on your site.
So what else can they, is aside from the community? So basically it's, the idea is that this is the community where they can get your patterns, they can join your club. What else can they do on your site?
So I run a shop for eyes. That's kind of like my big thing besides the patterns. So craft eyes are really hard to find nowadays in the store. So I have one of the largest selections of craft eyes on the web. Sizes, colors, I get them direct from the factory, and a lot of the comic eyes, they're exclusive in that I've never seen anyone else carry them, but I assume the factory isn't like, they're not breaking the molds or anything. So maybe they're somewhere else. But so that's really, it's the patterns, the club, and then the eyes. And then members to the club get a discount off of their eye purchases. So if you go into a big box store, you'll find maybe they have like certain, you know, like 12mm black ones, and that's about it.
So let's shift gears a little bit. I want to talk a little bit about business and creative services and your work with TNNA and how you're helping business owners. Cause that's the other side of the coin, right? I mean, you're really focused on that piece. So can you talk a little bit about what you're doing with TNNA and business and creative services. Just kind of chat a little bit about that.
Sure. I'll go through a bit of history for people who may be familiar or may not be familiar. So the TNNA is the industry organization, and it was founded at a time when everyone's roles were incredibly obvious. There were wholesalers who manufactured yarn, and there were stores called retailers who went and bought this yarn and sold it in their shops, right? And so all of the bylaws, all of the applications were built around this very, what is now archaic concept. And, you know, eventually they realized they're designers and teachers. And for a long time, designers and teachers, as it used to be called, had kind of a second rate status, we're still not actually a full member. There's a lot changing. TNNA got a new membership company, so this is all part of some big changes happening. But I think a lot of people felt like, we weren't allowed to sample it, for example, because the idea was that, like, well, you're not buying anything. You don't need to sample anything. And the organization realized this was very old-fashioned, and a lot of my peers aren't even members of TNNA anymore because they were like, screw that, it's not working for me, and left, which I think is sad. Mm-hmm. And I'm hoping they come back. But so what Business and Creative Services is it's the designer teacher, what used to be designers and teachers, but it also includes all of these things that never existed 30 years ago, like social media experts, web designers, basically like everyone who imaginably provides a service and isn't obviously wholesaling or retailing yarn. And I think the goal in the end is to kind of, there's a lot of membership changes happening because I also retail, right? I'm a designer. I also retail. I'm selling stuff, you know, I buy stuff wholesale and sell it on my site. So the lines have blurred a lot. So Business and Creative Services on one end is advocating for more equal representation across the whole industry. And then more specifically, we're working to provide more resources to people, let's say, who are like us, whatever that means. More of these types of classes in the education. The webinars have just started last year, which feature a lot of our members, like how to use social media in your yarn shops, things like that. We're working on events at the show, that sort of, you know, mm-hmm. sort of all the standard things you would assume we would be doing, getting content to newsletters, stuff like that.
Yeah, and I think those morning sessions were really great, which I was involved in in Washington, D.C. last year. And the idea, the concept is great because it's tech. It's basically, like, let's say, one session in the morning was for tech editors and how they can help the people in the, let's say, these sessions were inviting yarn company owners mm-hmm. to sit down. And right, and it was like, these people can help you with whatever you need to achieve in your business. Or illustrators were there to talk about what they could offer. So it's kind of connecting business, creative businesses to other creative businesses, right? Isn't that yeah. kind of the concept there?
Yeah. I mean, we're all creative business, you know, I mean, in a way, some of the things we say sound kind of trite because like we're all creative businesses. Right.
No, I get it. But I think but being on the inside, I get what you're saying. And I'm trying to distill it a little bit down for people that might yeah. be confused because I've been walking the floor since 2004. And I remember, and I was on the board of the Association of Knitwear Designers back in the day. And so, and I know Beth was involved in that too. Beth Whiteside, sorry, you guys. And so I interviewed Beth on Power Pearls, and she talked a little bit about BCS too. So the listeners have a little bit of an idea, and it's still evolving, you know. Mm-hmm. But the idea, like what you, circling back to what you said about, you know, when you're a designer and you're walking the floor and you get poo-pooed, you know, because you're a designer and you can't come in here right now. Or you got to kind of be cautious about when is it a good time for me to walk in their booth and talk,
right?
Or whatever it is. Or, you know, during the show floor hours, you know, we can't set up certain events. So, you know, things have to be early in the morning, you know, but I think,
right.
like you said, since the board or the management company of TNNA, things have been changing. And by the way, anyone listening for the first time, TNNA is the National Needle Arts Association. Just saying.
Just the worst acronym.
I know. I talk about it a lot.
But
you never know.
Counts.
you never know when someone new's out there listening. But anyway, so that's good. I mean, it's progress because that means with a new management company there that they're saying, hey, you know what? Hey, we're in this together. We can't be an island and have this pristine, you know, attitude like the yarn, The yarn people are separate from the designers.
Yeah, well, because some of it is, I mean, I'm just going to say this. I'm going to put on my new hat, a third hat, which is I'm the creative director for Luette, which is a wholesaler, right? So we're people who have a booth and do this thing. And there's a lot that TNNA can do. And so from a business and creative services, we're trying. But from a wholesaler perspective, you know what? There's only so much we can do, and y'all got to get your stuff together. So if a designer comes into my booth, my opinion as Stacy of Luette is you're a professional. You got the credentials to get into the show. Okay, so now let's talk about what we can do together to sell some stuff. Because if a designer comes in and makes a gorgeous sweater pattern, one sweater is $100 worth of my yarn, right? And so I can make just as much money from a good relationship with a designer as I can one store who walks in and orders, what, like $200, you know, $300 of yarn. And so a lot of yarn companies haven't made that realization yet. And there's nothing we as an organization can do about it. Like, this is the way of the world, and you get with it or you don't get with it. And to some extent, I sort of feel like, whatever, like there's companies that get it and you can tell who they are, and there's companies who don't get it, and it's all going to shift out in 5 years or so, you know?
And that's how it is in any business too. Yeah. And I think as, you know, being in that designer space, being prepared, having a strategy, having that confidence when you walk in a booth and doing it when the timing is right and saying, here's what I'm going to do with your yarn, and being professional and setting that example. Because I think that there have been poor examples.
Yes.
Again, like in any business. So, I think that whatever we can do as representatives from the designer aspect at these shows, it needs to be professional and setting a very high standard to create change.
My opinion, and this is who knows, whatever hat I'm wearing, is that if you walk in as a designer with a specific request or idea, then you're there at the show doing your work. And if anyone gives you crap about it, then you don't need to work with them. Because for years it was, okay, designers should come on Mondays because that's when you're not making sale. And obviously no one ever should bust in on anyone who's actually in the middle of doing something, right? But if you stood there and waited your turn until someone looks free, you shouldn't feel any remorse whatsoever about conducting the business that you've paid probably close to $1,000 to turn up to the show to do, right? By the time you fly in hotels and whatnot. And so anyway, that's what I have to say about it.
No, I think I think this opened up a nice conversation about, you know, just really the realities and also just kind of a code of conduct and, you know, setting an example, you know, to be a professional, like in any business, because it's a business, period,
right.
You know? So how can BCS, how specifically can, if someone listening wants to learn more and, you know, maybe join BCS?
We are just another checkbox on your TNNA membership. So there's nothing really, if you apply to TNNA, you get to pick whether you're a wholesaler, a retailer, or business and creative services, or there's like one other option.
I think designer is affiliate membership.
Oh, so business and creative services are all affiliate memberships.
Okay.
And that's how the structure is at this point.
Okay.
We are hoping that one day there will be no such thing as, you know, affiliates, and we're all just people and, you know, whatnot. But as it is now, all business and creative services members are affiliate members.
Is there a place that anyone can go and look? Do they have to go to tnna.org and then are there links, or is it easy to get to?
I mean, if you go to tnna.org, and there should just be an application. I mean, we don't have like a web. There's nothing. I mean, from one perspective, there's nothing really interesting about business. My goal is that there should be nothing interesting about business and creative services. Like, you apply to TNNA and you just are
part of
you are a designer in a business and creative services, or you're a wholesaler, you know?
I understand. But as far as the different types of networking events that are available.
Oh, sure. Well, all of the events get posted on the schedule. Mm-hmm. We also do have a Facebook group that you don't have to be a TNNA member to be in, Business and Creative Services. So if you go to facebook.com/TNNA services.
Okay.
We sort of vet it a bit because we just don't want everyone coming. But if you have listed in some, you know, a website or some, you know, it has to look like you are associated somehow with the yarn industry.
Yes.
And then, all of the events get posted on the TNNA calendar when it comes out.
And I like how, you know, it still is very ground floor, but it's a great group that has formed over the last, you know, several TNNAs. And every show there's a meeting. It's like sort of almost like a town hall meeting, I like to call it. And there's opportunities to volunteer and, you know, just be a part of it and make it grow and make it happen. So,
yeah, I mean, I think what people don't realize about TNNA is there is a management company who we pay to do, you know, organize the show. Cause like, you know, I'm not volunteering to book hotel rooms or whatever, but other than that, it's all volunteer. And so I do hear a lot of people saying like, oh, well, there should be a better newsletter there. It's like, well, are you volunteering? Because someone has to do it.
I know. Exactly. Yeah, it's exactly. So what kind of advice might you give someone wanting to start out and, you know, I was going to say in the industry, but maybe more specifically, if they want to dive into starting a digital membership club. I think I was just kind of going back there. But, you know, I'm just wondering if you might be able to share like your top five tips for what they should know.
Well, first, I would recommend it for people who have an established business. Because I think it's important that you know what product people are interested in. You know, like I tried lots of, you know, I've tried some, you know, Afghan patterns and whatnot. You know, I've really worked on honing my niche down. So I would recommend that, you know, if you're a pattern designer, you sort of know what you're known for or what you're really good at or what people want before you start a digital club. You have to I would also recommend having a somewhat established media outreach presence. I mean, because so few of your people are going to join. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Like, oh, yeah, definitely. Building that social platform is
And so it depends. Well, it also depends on what kind of club you're running. Like, if you don't have forums, quite honestly, it doesn't matter if you only have two people signed up. No one's going to know.
No.
Once you commit to having forums, you kind of need to have a lot of people signed up or else you look really silly. So you get to pick what kind of club you have. And I mean, the really easy way to start a club, which is to have a mystery knit along or a ebook that comes out sequentially. So I know people do this just through Ravelry, right? They have an ebook, it's going to be 12 patterns, and they get the file gets updated at the start of every month with the new pattern. And that is a club in a lot of ways. And so the benefit of it is that you can, you know what your payment is going to be because you have people who are already subscribed, right? So you're not kind of guessing like, ooh, is this pattern going to be popular? Is that three?
Yeah. I don't know. That's a lot. I mean, it's good. I mean, this is really good.
I think it's not, I mean, maybe I'm wrong, but I think it's not a way to start your business unless you really, unless you have like a super clear vision. Because I think a lot of times when you start your business, you're sort of just seeing what sticks and what works. And there's so much, if you're going to do a club in the, I set my whole website up to do this sort of way, you might end up spending a lot of money then feeling really stuck if it's not working that way, you know?
Yeah, that's really good advice. Instead of all the rosy stuff, you know, because it's like, yeah, I mean, if you're just starting out and you want to say, oh, I'm going to start a membership club, there are lots of... I mean, it's, you know, the back end can be very complicated,
mm-hmm.
right? And to do it yourself, I mean, it's kind of difficult, you know, and so lots of moving parts. So it's better to just kind of start small and gradually move yourself up. And like you said, the whole social reach thing, building your email list, these are important things, or it's going to be kind of hard to actually have.
Yeah, I mean, most clubs, I mean, and this is true of indie dyers too, most clubs I've seen end up being a semi-successful person giving something to their existing member, their existing customers who kind of want a little extra.
Yeah. So they evolve out of something else. And that's kind of the natural progression. And you just touched on something before, and we said this in the pre-chat, and I jokingly said in an email this morning that I wanted all of Stacy because,
right.
because you know, you have your hands in so many different pots, which we said earlier too. So we covered, you know, the membership, the community, the, you know, your, you know, what you're doing at TNNA to help business owners. What else is there that we may have missed about you, Stacy?
So I mentioned it briefly. I'm the creative and marketing director for
Luet
North America.
That's right.
So that's really fun. So I do all of their social media. I do the newsletters. I do, you know, I pick yarn colors, that sort of thing. So that's a whole lot of fun. It's like playing in, I say it's playing in my Stacy sandbox, but way bigger.
I like that. That's really good. And that's what it's about. I mean, the whole diversification aspect. I know, you know, that just designing patterns and working for magazines or having an indie collection isn't enough.
Yeah. And it's also, you know, I mean,
and it's fun to switch gears too.
Yeah. I've been designing since 2008 So I'll step back. In 2014 or whatever, I was like, okay, let me see where Fresh Stitches can go. Can I become the, intro to crafting, right? So I had kits for everything. So cross-stitch kits, English paper piecing tutorials, like everything. And it just didn't really work that well. And I was like, okay, well, Fresh Stitches is just crocheted stuffed animals. And then there's only so big that can get, you know? So for me, intellectually, like, I love knitting. I love doing all these other kinds of things, but I can't, like, Fresh Stitches just can't go there. So for me, it's also about having a creative outlet. It's different from stuffed animals a bit.
Well, and also a physical club can, you know, you're talking about the stuffed animals or, you know, some different aspects that maybe didn't work. You know, you can't be everything to everybody either. And also people grow out of physical clubs, they move on at some point. And May talked about that at CraftCon because, you know, with her necklaces, and she would have certain products that would rotate. And she talked about two different iterations of her club and the one that was where it was sort of a mystery and you would just get whatever. But then what if someone joined or someone was there and they got a repeat necklace? And so she, you know, she encountered, and that's all trial and error, right? So we're all, anyone starting this, you know, for the first time, there's going to be that for you, no matter what. You can't avoid it. And then she changed it to like a revolving thing. But then she said eventually she noticed the lifespan was like a year.
Mm-hmm.
So would you say that that was, but I mean, you were always creating new patterns, or did you have a collection that would rotate? You just kind of kept
So I'm creating new patterns. I think my life cycle is longer than a year because of the community aspect I have in there. And I also run crochet alongs and giveaways. And so my life cycle is much longer than a year because you're not just getting
digital.
The product.
For the digital, because like she was talking about her physical her physical club. So when you did have when you had your physical club, would you say that it was more of a life? There was a life.
I had people in there for the full 3.5 years. I mean, that's not to say some people don't drop out, but there was even without the forums, it was still much more of a, I get this and now I do something with it. And I, you know, give the stuffed animal to my grandson. So I do think the lifespan is a bit different for crafting. I mean, and yarn clubs too. I mean, I know indie dyers who are running yarn clubs and they have people in there for multiple years because you're getting the yarn, but it's a product you do something with. And it's also totally normal to stash yarn. Whereas once you have 12 scented food-shaped necklaces, many people feel like that's enough.
That's enough.
So they're kind of different products.
Although May talked about a person that spent over $2,000 with her that she said she was like, right. I really don't know. What are they doing with all these necklaces? But obviously they're gifting them or something like that.
Right.
So it's just interesting. Sometimes you get those interesting members.
Yeah.
So let's just talk. We've been on for a while. I just have a few more questions and then I'll let you go. And I wanted to ask you, just because, you know, you've got this community and it does take time and maintenance. So let's talk a little bit about habits and accountability. So do you have a personal habit that you follow each day that helps you stay on track? Like, what's that main overarching habit?
Well, I mean, I just have sort of a habit. I don't know. I wake up. that's such a big question.
I guess so. Yeah.
I'm maybe a very organized person by trade. So some of it, I think I am unable to sort of like intuit because I just like do it. I'm a big fan of weekly to-do lists. There's a lot about me. I travel a ton. And so there are certain weeks that are just like travel weeks and that's like gone from my calendar because I can't really do much. So basically my calendar looks something like, 1 week I'm crocheting a sample for the club and preparing some class materials. The next week I'm traveling. The next week is about formatting and, you know, editing and photography. And then the next week is about, like, I have tasks allocated to each week. And when it plays out, that's how it works, to have something posted new each month and getting things shipped out. On a daily basis, I do my email every day. I mean, except weekends.
Good for you.
I check in on forums. well, I mean, if I don't, I have a very long thing to come back to. So that's it's never been exciting to me to come back to like 500 emails.
No, exactly.
Instagram, Facebook, I don't know, the usual.
Yeah, the usual. Well, you know, as I'm listening to you, you know, other things have come to mind because, you know, it's like, you know, you hear this consistency, being consistent and having this yep. schedule, but I don't know, you know, I think every day is a little bit different. And I know for myself, it's like, I can like at the end of the day, plan the next day, you know, so maybe I can't do my Instagram until, you know, later in the day, or mm-hmm. like I try to do it at the same time every day, you know, as far as posting is concerned. So as long as I'm a step ahead, as far as the scheduling aspect, like when it's already going to be out to the world. Mm-hmm. But as far as the time to do certain things, every day kind of serves up some different things. So, you know, to be really rigid about that, because you were saying every week is a little bit different, but every day, you generally have the same key things.
Most of my days are pretty similar. Yeah. I mean, I'm also very constrained by the little person in my life. So oh. I only get a few hours. Like, I don't, you know, I don't really have the option of at 6 p.m. I feel like Instagramming, because that's just like this week, my husband's in Italy and I have to do all the things I have to do. And that's just how like our lives are. So I do pretty much follow the same schedule every day, just because that's how my life works.
That's
but it doesn't
works.
Work for everyone.
Right. I think it's different for everyone. But I just thought I'd ask you for a little sneak peek into that, because a lot of the times we can garner little, you know, nuggets from people.
My tip I tell people, though, is to, I don't book anything on Fridays. So that's like my spillover day. And that's, it always gets filled. And if it's not filled, I can either have the day off or I can do something kind of fun, like, I don't know, like some work-related thing, like make a new download or whatever for my website or something like that. So I am a big believer in only scheduling out 4 days of your week so that you have a little wiggle room at the end.
I love that. I think that's the best piece of advice because I don't leave any time for that. And I've also heard that called blank canvas days. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've heard that. I put that on my schedule. I never follow it. I'm like, right. Why? Just crazy. The world will be there when you get back. Anyway, so this was great. And I just want to thank you for you know, spending this time and also working out some of the technical difficulties at the beginning. So how can the listeners learn more about you?
So my website's freshstitches.com. I teach on Craftsy. I have 4 classes on Craftsy. So if you go there, I guess you just type in my name. On Instagram, I'm Stacy Trock. And on Twitter, I'm Stacy_Trock. And I think that's it. There is, that's I was it. Saying earlier, there is no one place where all of the Stacy things happen. just because my life to consumers is very different. Like, my customers don't really care that I'm working at TNNA, you know, because it's not their interest.
Exactly. No, they don't. Right. Mm-hmm.
So I would say if people are professionally interested in me, then Twitter is usually where I talk about me being me, the Stacy, and dealing with various things. Whereas my website is very consumer based.
All right. Well, that's great. So thank you again for joining me today.
Thanks so much for having me.
All right. See ya. Well, that wraps up another episode of Power Pearls Podcast. I hope you guys really enjoyed that with Stacy. She's very knowledgeable when it comes to membership clubs, and she really gave you some great advice for, you know, really starting out. And I think what I liked the most was her suggestion to really know, you know, who your audience is, know who you are, like, what are you offering? So that you can really niche down and offer something that's unique. And that's a really big part of it. And also to grow that platform, to grow that social reach, because that's really important, especially now, since a lot of us do have online businesses. And that is becoming really the major way that many of us in the fiber world are able to make a sustainable living as a designer. So, you know, the days of only working for magazines or making books is sort of going by the wayside. So these are important things. And you know what? If you don't have a platform, that's okay. I mean, let's face it. I am still growing mine. I have been with Creative Knitting, you know, for so long that I really wasn't focused on building a platform as much as I am now, you know, now that I am out on my own. And so I've been talking more and more about that. So many of you know that I actually left Creative Knitting back in February. And so now I'm building this, you know, thing that we got here, this amazing podcast. And my focus is to really build community, because community is where it's at. And to be totally honest, I would rather communicate. I would rather, let's say, engage with, you know, 10 amazing people rather than 1,000 people who don't even reach out and say anything. So, I mean, those are pretty extreme numbers there, but you get the point. So anyway, check out Stacy at freshstitches.com. You can see what she's up to, join her membership. Also, any of you that are aspiring to really get involved with TNNA, you can just kind of spend some time on that website, and you can go to tnna.org and to really see what it's about, especially if you are serious about becoming a professional in the yarn and needle arts world. So with that, I'm going to wrap it up and do one more little quick reminder about Stitchucation shawls, which I mentioned at the beginning. But I just want to remind you, because we get into these episodes and we forget to go to these fabulous places online to sign up for special things. So don't forget to reserve your spot, because if you don't, and if you guys are patrons or you're on my newsletter list, I just want you to know that if you don't sign up, you won't get notified. So this is a special list that you'll be receiving notifications when we start. So if you go to powerpearlspodcast.com/shawls to sign up, you'll get that welcome email, and then I'll kind of run you through the paces for what to expect next. So that's it, you guys. I hope you enjoyed, and I will see you next time.